Can you believe in a finite object possessing infinite power? Or that a mineral can be proclaimed the medicine of the 21st century? Or that the power of nature can win over the ignorance of man? If you can, you will know why our mission is to get Shungite to the masses. You are entering the Shungite Zone. This is the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio and simulcasted over Hagishat Radio. And welcome to the Shungite Radio Show. It is January 22nd. I have a problem with this 2019. With me today, my name's Nancy Hopkins. This is being produced by Cosmic Reality. And with me today is Michael Henry Dunn, who is got a biography that we're not going to get even into. He's an artist, he's a musician, he's an actor, he's a activist, he's just really pretty special. And the reason we're not going to get into it is because last Friday, I believe it was, he was on with Carrie Cassidy and did a really awesome presentation of who he is and what he thinks. And I will be putting the link either in, you know, down under wherever you're listening to, you'll find the link. The reason that we're doing that we're not really doing a normal introduction to Michael is that after the show, Carrie sent him something regarding 5G. And you guys that follow me, you know how much I love the 5G Death March. Okay, so when he got it, he said, "Can we address this?" And I said, "Oh, absolutely." Because what she presented was a good researcher saying to somebody, you know, how would you answer this? You know these questions. And what it is a really, really, it's the other side's presentation of, oh, 5G is just lovely. Don't worry about it. You're going to have faster internet. Okay, so we're going to, I am going to kind of like chit-chat with him for a bit, but that's what we're going to get into. We're going to go back to the 5G and just try to get it out there so that people can easily be able to answer the questions that Carrie had. How do you address what is being said here? So with no more ado here, we're going to have Michael Henry Dunn say hi to you guys. Michael?
Hey, hello everybody. Hi, Nancy.
Great to be with you. Oh, that's all you're going to say?
Well, hello. Yeah, this is actually, I agree with you totally on this, Nancy, that you know, Carrie's provided us with a good opportunity here to address the heart of what is going to be the other side's story. And for me, you know, it goes right back to what Al Gore did with Inconvenient Truth, was that he exposed what the tobacco industry did to dilute the truth about lung cancer, to dilute the science, to, you know, present, you know, over a period of decades, you know, the line of watering down the evidence about, you know, the cancer-causing reality of cigarettes so that they could, you know, protect their money, make their investment, and, you know, never mind that hundreds of thousands of people die. So this is very much in the same vein, you know, of let's dilute the science, let's get some, you know, oh, the National Institute of Health says and the National Cancer Foundation says. And we could get into the story of, okay, who funds those foundations, who funds what studies for what purpose. Not that we're maligning these scientists and researchers as being, you know, conscious tools of an evil cabal. Some of them might be. Some of them are probably just sincere researchers working with the funding they're given for the specific studies that get funded, you know, for reasons that can be obvious if you start to, you know, look at the big picture. So I am really glad to have the opportunity to specifically address the way in which they're saying, hey, you know, these are just radio frequencies. you know, this is not ionizing radiation. These are just harmless little radio frequencies that you've been using for decades without getting cancer. And because I am not a scientist, you know, I'm a human rights activist and a spokesperson for the Sacred Academy of Geoenergetics. I'm the executive director, and in that role, I'm a spokesperson. This is a perfect opportunity, you know, with all of your knowledge, Nancy, about, you know, the down and dirty about 5G and the solution-oriented pretty much miracle of shungite. And for me, that has to be, you know, brought together with activism, with political action, with awareness-raising action to stop the implementation if we can. But in the meantime, you know, let's protect ourselves and our families. So with that little preamble there, yeah, let's get to the meat of it and what you see as the, you know, what kind of distortion they're trying to put in the field here with this propaganda, and what's the scientific facts. Gosh, I hope this has been heard. Hello.
Oh, it was me. I was muted. I was so into what you were saying, I forgot I was producing. Okay. First off, when we talk about 2G, 3G, 4G, we're talking about a technology that is the same technology. It's just been upgraded. So you have a different generation. So they come out and they start talking about 5G, and everybody assumed that, oh, 5G is just like it was with 4G, and it's just updating. Well, unfortunately, that's not what is happening. Now, I'm going to tell you a story. Whether you believe the story or not, and I'm talking to my audience here, I think you'll believe me, Michael. If you believe me or not is of little consequence. The story I'm about to tell you. But let's just look back to 1976. I had been in the military by that time. I had gone from being, okay, I was direct commissioned, which direct commissioned means that my college degree allowed me to get into the military with the rank of second lieutenant. I went in because the Army was promising me something else. I didn't go in because I wanted to be an intelligence officer. I was going in to become a drug program expert. The only really good one at that time was in the Army, and the University of Massachusetts had been asked by high school throughout the state, we need to have somebody that we can put on our staff that knows something about drugs, because even in 76, the drug problem was beginning to rear itself in the high schools. So anyway, I got involved in it, and I was going to be the person to set up this operation. I had just graduated. I had graduated as a student in the history department, but I was also a voting member of the faculty, even though I wasn't on the faculty. Long story. So I had a presence on the university, and we did this. The best place was the Army. I said, let me go into the Army for a couple of years, you know, because nobody really knew what we were getting ourselves into. So I go in the Army. Well, the Army sees that I'm a Soviet expert out of college. And all of a sudden, they grab me, and I'm on a path that I had no concept of. And what that path was to the Army Security Agency. The Army Security Agency is semi-secret. You know it's there, but it's the Army's agency that is like NSA. It's involved in electronics warfare, in espionage, electronic espionage, protecting ourselves from that kind of espionage. That's what the Army Security Agency was about. There's one for the Navy and one for the Air Force, and the three would work with NSA in this super intelligence. I mean, it's the highest echelons of the intelligence world that you can get into. The agency was called the Super Spooks by the rest of the Army, which was insane. Anyway, so I get into the Army, and I was also, when I got there, I was not really. I dabbled in telepathy and in remote viewing. My position in the Army put me in a position where those two skills, telepathy and remote viewing, became very, very critical. My staff, well, I ended up having my own unit that was to address the threat by the Soviet Union to our electronics. By then, I had written the program of instruction that was being used at the U.S. Intelligence School for the Army on military tactics used by the Soviets in the Warsaw Pact. Now I'm into electronic warfare. And this was, you might want to mute your mic there, Michael. So I get to the point of where my staff, I hired my staff based on how fast I could teach them telepathy. How well could they learn telepathy? Because where we were at that time, I needed people that I could work with and didn't have to explain everything to. So I could do it telepathically. My remote viewing began to be exercised because I would get a photograph from the CIA of some new vehicle in East Germany, and they didn't know what it was. But I had the picture, and I could use the picture as an anchor to do a remote view and then walk inside this vehicle and look at the documents. And I don't know Russian, but for some reason, when I would look at the documents, I could read them. And that's why I went from a second lieutenant to the highest echelons of the intelligence community at the time and was awarded a medal that is only given to the generals. It's never been given to a second lieutenant, and it was certainly very few women ever received, if any. I was offered a job to an outside job in the military by the think tanks to head a program that would unify all of the computers in all of the defense departments, because each one of them had a different system and they couldn't talk to each other. While I was in the process of doing all of this, I realized that we had a major, major problem. Now, by this time, I was a conspiracy buff in that I believed John Kennedy had not been assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald. But still, that I'm a military person. I'm thinking military. I'm the intelligence officer. I got to know what the Soviets are looking at. I've got to figure out what. Well, so I'm doing my job, and I suddenly realized that the Soviet Union, the most powerful electronic warfare intelligence operation on the planet, was not targeting U.S. defense units. It was targeting the banks, the industry. You know, why are they so interested in economy, industry, and finance? What are they looking at? Okay, so now I'm beginning to get the first inklings that the Soviets were more concerned about something happening inside the government, inside of us. And so I started looking at it as the Soviets looked at it. And because I was where I was, I had access to information that other people didn't have. All I had to do was ask, and I had a phone that attached me to the NSA. The phone itself cost $50,000 because it was the beginning of the internet, and it was an encrypted phone. $50,000, and there was only one other phone like that on the post, and that was in the communications center. The other one was on my desk. So I had access to information, and the more I looked, the scarier it got, and I started to use the system to communicate with anybody that would listen to me, because it was so preposterous. It's like, why do you think that there's some cabal in the United States? What makes you think that? Because the Soviets think that. You know, there's something very wrong. So I started to try to a general, he was the commander of the units that trained everybody, okay? And he began to talk to me through channels. There was no internet. And he'd ask me some questions, and then I'd answer them, and then I'd get another communication from him, and I'd go, wait a minute, I already answered these questions. What's happening here? Then something else happened, and all of a sudden, all of my spider instincts, you know, like Spider-Man, start to flicker, and I'm going like, I'm in getting deeper and deeper into real deep shit. And so I decided I have to get out of here. You know, I can't operate here because it just was too scary. And then the think tanks come to me and they say, oh, Hopkins, how would you like to come over with us and do this amazing thing and you'll be able to know everything that ever was, any place, anywhere, anytime. Oh, come on over with us. And I was like, oh, wow, this is like the opportunity of I couldn't even imagine it. But then something else happened and I went, no, I'm not going to do that. So I leave the Army, and this is the story I want to tell. And I was having a horrible time adjusting as a human being. All of a sudden, I go from you know, the Third World War into, you know, mates and money and sex and drugs and, you know, what was the civilian life was not at all conforming to what I had just left. And I kind of facetiously said, I was working as a waitress. I facetiously said to somebody that was working with me, oh my God, I need to find somebody that's a psychologist and also knows psychic powers, you know, can address them. She said, well, I got a friend of mine that does that. I said, what are you talking? Well, by the end of that day, I was in front of somebody who, he had his apartment and he had like an office in the apartment. And so he was a friend of this girl's, and so we go over there, and I mean, as soon as we got in each other's frequencies, we began to read each other's minds. And so we're having this conversation in our minds, and this poor person doesn't know what that, you know, she's just there. And so he very, you know, talked to me a little bit, and he's still reading my mind, you know. And so he says, well, let's just have, well, I'll set it up so that you can come back tomorrow. So, because we had to have a conversation, and she didn't need to be there. So the next day I go back, and to be honest with you, I got his name written down someplace, but I've always used the name Vincent to just as a cover for him because, you know, because he worked for a unit in the United States that is the one that they talk about when they talk about they kill goats, don't they, with Cooney, that movie. He was one of those people. And every so many years, they actually go on sabbatical. They're sent out of it to kind of get balanced and grounded because it can screw you up. And that's what he was on sabbatical. And to make a long story short, this man, first off, he realized immediately that, well, he said to me, will you do a test for me? And I said, sure. And he starts showing me pictures of electronic equipment. And I'm going like, well, it's that and that, that. And then he shows me something, and I have no clue what it is. I say, I don't know what it is. And he said, well, that's a problem. Nobody knows what it is. He said, would you do a remote view and see if you can find out what it is? And I'm like, I suppose I could, but, you know, what's this all about, you know? And he just sort of like, I don't know how to explain it. It was almost like he telepathically sent me a signal, and it was a mind control signal, without a doubt. And it was like, you know, you're going to do this. Okay, I mean, and I, you know, because, okay, so I decided to, all right. Well, when I did it, and I've told this story so many times, I'm focusing on the picture. It's an anchor drawing me in from the remote view to where the image of that, where that that image is. And as I start to do it, I all of a sudden see SWAT stickers all over the place, and felt fear like I couldn't even believe you could be that fearful. And so I backed out of it, and you know, I said, well, that was interesting. And then I don't think I did it right away. I think I went tried to go back in right away, but got the same reaction. And so I waited a day. I tried a third time, same thing. And then the phone rings, and it's Vincent. And he said, "Did you try remote view?" And I said, "Well, yeah." And he said, "You need to get over here right now and make sure you're not followed." And I said, "Okay." So I get over there, making sure I'm not followed. Trying to get there, I almost was killed, but that's another story. So I get there, and all his apartment is being packed up. There's all these boxes. And he said, apparently you spooked them. And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I didn't tell you this." He said, "But you're the most powerful telepath I have ever encountered." And he said, "If you're anywhere near in your telepathic capabilities, what you do with the remote, they felt you coming in. They have psychics that are waiting for other remote viewers to try to intrude upon whatever it is they're protecting. And when you came in, you hit them with such a force that they went into an emergency program." He said, "I don't want you to take this personally. I was the one that sent you in there." He said, "But people that are psychics, that do what you do, that are part of our organization, not just here in the United States, but in all the NATO countries," he said, "they're dropping dead." He said, "I just came out of the hospital. I was comatose for 3 days. And I'm like, "Oh, crap. What the hell is this about?" And so I started asking him questions about, you know, how did it happen? Why were they dropped? He said, "Well," he said, "some of them actually just did drop dead." He said, "But some of them," he said, "in two occasions, there was a pillar of fire." And he said, "There's a whole bunch of them that are walking around with their brains scrambled." And so I said, "Well, what are you doing?" He said, "Well, we've all been called back into active duty." And I said, "Well, what am I supposed to do?" He says, "You stay deep and do not use your powers." He said, "They're looking for you. They are looking for you." He said, "The best thing you can do is to stay as far from me as you can." And I'm like, really? I mean, my mind is going 1,000 miles a minute. And I looked at him and I said, "There's got to be more to this." And he said, "The only thing I can tell you to do is to read the book, The Philadelphia Experiment," which I actually had on my library but had never read, and by Berlitz. And I said, "Okay," I said, "but there's something more here." And he said, "Yes, there is." And he opened up his mind, and I was looking at an ET. So this guy who's extraterrestrial had infiltrated the United States Army psychic program, and he also let me know that there was a plan to use this psychic weapon system, psionics weapons, as the Russians would say, to control every human being on the planet. I went into such rage. I mean, I can't tell you the rage I went into. And a part of it was because I didn't know what to do. I'm saying to him, "What am I supposed to do?" He says, "We can't help you." He said, "This is your fight." He said, "We will be there when we can, but we can't do this for you. You've got to do it." Okay, so I've spent the rest of my life since 76 fighting what is called 5G. This was not built as a fifth generation product. 5G is not the same technology at all. It is based on a smaller signal that is so damaging. It actually is the same frequency being used by the DNA to communicate. It will, when they turn it on, you will not be able to think again. It muddles your brain. It destroys your body. Fast. they try. They've got some of this work in England. They had a contest. You want to be the new modern city? Well, here, come on, you know. And this place won it. And Mona Radler had this man on. I think his name is Mark Steele. She's in chat. If I'm wrong, Mona, let me know. He was a business person, and all of a sudden his friends has got cancer, his family's got cancer, his animals have got cancer, and they just put this 5G system in there. And he became an advocate to fight it. And the amount, and Max Egan is another one that I really, really appreciate the fact that he saw it exactly the way I saw it, that 5G kills so fast. 4G kills slow. 5G kills so fast that if we're lucky, people will wake up in time to stop it, because we can't fix this. We cannot fix this. Shanghai cannot fix this. This is a moral imperative, because this is a death march that I've known about since 1976. It's a death march. They want to control us. If we allow 5G to go active every place, kiss it goodbye, boys and girls. And if I'm wrong about any of this, let's step back to 4G. Okay? In 4G, everything was like, oh gosh, everything's fine, we're doing good. And then people started dying. And they were dying from cancers in their brain, tumors in their brains that is only associated with Wi-Fi frequencies. Okay, they know this now. You've got all sorts of scientists, all sorts of organizations that are screaming about 4G. And then 5G comes along. Now, I thought I had until 2020 for this. I thought I could set myself up as an authority on these things. Please listen to me. You can't allow them in there. And maybe, you know, but no, it went online. But what it's doing is it's forcing everybody to become an authority on it. You know, this is bad. This is really bad. Well, Max Egan saw what I saw. It was a line in the sand. It was going to kill so fast that people would wake up, and hopefully we would wake up in time. And because the only way we're going to stop this is to come together as a people, as a humanity, as a species. Because this is a species killer. Okay? And that's what I see happening. So the fact that Kerry gave us this opportunity to address their particular presentation of why it's okay is really a godsend. But I do want to say one thing more. And that's because when I've been talking about this since forever, 40 years of talking about this stuff. And when you get into the what, you know, prove it to me. Well, I can throw you all sorts of proof that you're going to dismiss, but money talks. And in 16, Lloyd's of London put an excursion, it's called Excursion 32, into their documents. Now, why is Lloyd's so important? Because Lloyd's takes on the riskiest insurance things. You know, somebody's got a risky thing, they got to go to Lloyd's. Nobody else is going to pick you up. So when Lloyd's did this, it was like it took us all by, you know, kind of like, what did they just do? Because what they were saying is that they, Lloyd's, exclusion 32, would no longer pay out any insurance for any disease or injury to the body that is based on Wi-Fi and every other conceivable electromagnetic signal. So if the insurance companies if put this in, it's in your insurance, you've got it, I guarantee it. Every insurance company now has exclusion 32. It's the smoking gun. If the insurance companies know that they have to pay out billions, maybe trillions of dollars, if it was, you know, legitimately working, and they say, no, right up front, not going to do it, don't you think you better pay attention? So that's 4G. And 5G, the people running Lloyd's aren't going to be able to think. So it's all over. I'm sorry, it's Michael Henry, but for some reason I get drawn more to the Henry than the Michael. Michael.
That's okay. My grandfather's name was Harry, short from Henry. So Henry's good with me, but my friends call me Michael. It's all good.
Good. Tell me what you're thinking. Ask me questions or give me your opinion of how you're seeing it.
Well, I mean, this is a mind-blowing story. I mean, I knew that you had a U.S. Army background. I knew it had to do with energy weapons. The full background here is compelling, to say the least. And I have a feeling that Kerry Cassidy will certainly find it of great interest and also of credibility. I mean, I can't speak for Kerry, but certainly, you know, she has dealt with enough, you know, whistleblowers coming forward with this kind of information, you know, over the many years she's been doing her work, that she's going to recognize, like, okay, let's see, which source do I trust here? Do I trust this guy from Bonner and Partners telling all the people who've invested in his heavy telecom stock package that 5G is lovely, and here's the National Institute of Health to say so, and not to worry, you know, it's just radio frequency, etc. Am I going to believe this guy, or am I going to believe Nancy Hopkins and the story that she is sharing here? You know, in my experience, Kerry has a very sharp, intuitive sense of credibility and sincerity, and you know, she's extremely intelligent and perceptive, and has a huge background of, you know, the full spectrum of information that's come in from whistleblowers over the decades about exactly this kind of thing. And I gather that she has been targeted herself with these kind of attacks. So, again, I can't speak for Kerry, but she has certainly given us a great opportunity here to immediately get to the heart of this and expose it. I think it might be helpful in that context to just say, okay, you know, this line they're coming at here, oh, it's just radio frequencies that have been used in radio, TV, wireless networks for decades. It's a careful area of study. This is what the guy's letter says. Oh, it's a careful area of study for regulatory agencies to ensure that these RF waves have no negative impact on consumers' health. There's been no conclusive evidence that radio frequency wireless technology causes any side effects, et cetera, right? So if you could focus on just like debunking the radio frequency line about 5G and what, in fact, it relies on, even, you know, the information that they're putting forward on what 5G is. As you say, the name itself is deceptive. It's like, oh, this is just the fifth generation, 5G. You know, you loved 4G, you're going to go into ecstasy over 5G. If we can just debunk that particular source of that particular point that this article she shared with me is making, you know, we can go a long way to debunking this as a talking point for the propaganda. Does that make sense? You're muted still, I think.
That's the number one thing I was told when I started production. The most difficult part of it is muting and unmuting. I'm failing today. Okay. Let's just think in terms of systems. Right now, we have a massive 4G system. I don't know about anybody else, but I don't know that I need to be any faster. I certainly don't need to be any faster if it means it's going to kill me. So there's no actual need, nor is there a perceived need by most people that we need to be faster. So the premise that we need to be faster is just BS. Okay?
Right?
Okay, so that's number one. Number two, we've had second generation, third generation, and fourth generation based on the same system that is already in place. They're just, you know, putting more power in it, making it bigger, basically. But it's still the same technology. why then, if this is the same technology, only an improvement in 5G, do we have to use different antenna systems and use hundreds of satellite systems for this to work, and these antenna systems have to be 800 feet apart? Which means that on your street, every 800 feet, you know, which is 800 feet is not that far, you know, so every few houses, you're going to have an antenna system. An antenna system that is putting out more energy by an unbelievable, see, I wished I had known I was going to do this. I would have pulled up my notes, the numbers. The numbers are staggering as to how much more powerful this little thing is in your yard that's cooking you because it's using microwave. Microwave, all right, when you now the reason they need these 800 feet is because we're talking frequencies. We're talking energy. Now, you don't see it, but you know it. Because you plug in your light and it turns on. You plug in your computer, you can turn it on. There's an energy force that's coming through the wires that you don't see. Well, they also have the ability to put it through the air, which is Wi-Fi. But to put it through the air with Wi-Fi, it's a much more complex signal. So when you're talking electricity, you're talking a sine wave. The sine wave is the same thing you see, the bell curve, you know, when you were a kid, the bell curve. It's the same thing as sine wave. Up and down, nice and even, everything is balanced. When you're talking about 5G, you're talking about a much more complex signal that if you were to graph it out would look like a square, not a sine wave. Okay? Because it's a different technology. But that's true with 4G. But when you get to 5G, the antenna system, all right, now also in a signal, you have to consider, all right, you got the top, let's talk a sine wave. You got the top of the sine wave, okay? Well, what distance does it take for it to go down to the bottom and then back up to the top? How far will that signal travel? In the case of the technology that's out there right now, just look at how far away you're driving down the country roads in New York State. Okay, how far away are these antenna systems that you're seeing? They're miles. Okay, and now I have to have every 800 feet another antenna system. Why? Because you're using a signal that is not traveling miles. It's traveling 800 feet. It's the same technology that's used in a microwave oven. Would you put your cat in the microwave to dry it off? Well, you're about to put your kids in your house with the same system, a microwave. You're going to allow your children to live in a microwave oven. Think that's a good idea? I wouldn't.
Yeah.
All right, now, the other part of it is a smart meter. The smart meter comes out, and all of a sudden, it's weird because you can actually, if you've got the measurement equipment, you can see it happen. What happens is a smart meter is connected to the power company, and it all sends out a signal that goes through your house. And I think it's every 12 minutes. And it goes through your house. And what it does is it takes readings. Okay? Now, how does a signal take readings, you go? Well, when you have a radio signal, there's a thing called a carrier wave. And it's a known parameters. In other words, every frequency has parameters. It's moved so fast, it's got so, goes so high, it goes so far. Those are parameters. They're what you're looking at. If you're looking at a signal, you're looking at what are the details of that signal. The carrier wave, everybody knows the details of the carrier wave. So anything that seems to be attached to the carrier wave is out of, you know, that known parameters, That's your intelligence. That's how you have audio coming over the internet right now. That's how you have any kind of music and video. All of that is based on a carrier wave. The carrier wave that comes through your house in your electric system, okay, was normally just because it's a signal and you can put things on it, but nobody was putting things on it. So they decide, okay, let's do the smart meter thing. So the smart meter thing, what it does is it uses your electric, your regular electric system as a carrier wave. But then it is, they add a sophisticated signal to that to make it a more, let's say, delicate, okay, a delicate carrier wave, so that the most minute changes in the field is registered as intelligence. I don't know if this is making it clear to you. It's difficult, but just think of it. You got a carrier wave. Things happen to the carrier wave, and if it's not within the parameters, then that's intelligence.
You mean what, intelligence, Nancy, in terms of like data?
Data, yes, that's a better word for it. Thank you, data. But it's gathering intelligence as it goes through your house. So it knows you got the television on, the fish tank's on, the refrigerator's on. Oh, you're doing wash. It can tell all of that because it goes through, zips through, goes back to the company. All this is done by computer. And then you are able to see exactly the electric usage in a house. Okay, well, that's that. All right, so, okay, I can kind of live with that. But then they upgraded a little bit more so that now it is so sensitive that it goes through the house, it picks up all the electric stuff, but then it runs into my field, my bioelectromagnetic field. And it goes, oh, Nancy's sitting at the computer. Let's see how healthy she is. Oh, she's doing all right. Oh, maybe we should kill her. Boom, dead. That's what it's all about. That's how sophisticated it is. That's the mind control, the psychic weapons thing that they told me about in 1976. You know, this guy, Harold, he's a German, I can't think of his last name, but he is amazing because he's been out there doing a lot of different things. But this time it was on 5G. And he knew that they were doing a 5G test in Germany, in this one area. And apparently he doesn't drive, he had a driver, and he said to the driver, please do not go through this area. Because he knows he's targeted, and he was really afraid that if he drove through the 5G area, they could heart attack him. Okay? So he says, I don't know if the guy was messing with me. He said he drove so that the car passed into the 5G, even though it didn't go through it. It went right on the edge of it. He said, but even that was enough. And I wish I could give you the real words, but what he was saying is that he felt that his soul was being ripped from his body. That was the way, that's the way I understood him to say it. So highly sensitive people are not going to survive even them turning it on. They're all going to go zombie, or they're going to go into complete rage, or whatever. You know, those of us that are out there that are their most dangerous enemies, many of us will just drop dead. The ones that are what David Wilcox, and I happen to agree with this, because I've been asked many times, well, why are you still alive? Part of it's immense luck, but most of it is luck that was because there's spirits. It was the universe of divine intervention. But in radio, I have a much greater voice than I did when I was writing books. So why is it that I'm still doing? Why is it that David's still doing? And he said, because there seems to be a rule that you can't kill the Red Cross worker. So if you're pure of heart, absolutely pure of heart, they can't come after you. There's some kind of a law. And David says, so I'm real careful about what I do and what I think, and I agree with him.
Yeah, they call it the rules. The bad guys call it the rules. They know they can't break the rules. But they can break the rules if they pull down your vibration. If they pull you into, you know, wrong activity, wrong ethics, wrong morals, lower vibration, they can lower your protection level, right?
Yes. And it's, you know, the problem really is cognizant dissonance. Because, and Carrie's kind of got it, you know? It's like you go out there and you look at this and you look at this and you look at this and it keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And finally you come to this 5G thing and it sounds so sci-fi. You know, it's like, oh yeah, you got to be kidding me. Right? You know, and nobody wants to hear it.
Sorry? Yeah, Nancy, excuse me. I was just going to say about, you know, my experience anyway of Carrie Cassidy is that she's familiar with cognitive dissonance. She's seen such a huge spectrum of this kind of information that I don't think, you know, I mean, she was letting me know in the interview last Friday that, yeah, 5G is scary, and my last whistleblower information is that they've already implemented nanotechnology satellites, self-replicating nanosatellites that are already in place in lower orbit, that, you know, the 5G system, it's not about, oh, Elon Musk and other guys are going to put 20,000 satellites in the next 24 months. It's already there. And Carrie was saying, hey, you know, what about this, Michael? So she's, you know, she's been down so many rabbit holes and, you know, how dark it is down there. And she's pretty much seen it all. So I don't think she's got any cognitive dissonance still in place. That'd be my guess anyway.
I don't know, because I can say that I do. I, you know, because it comes down to this. This is the problem, all right? I can tell you about the technology. I can tell you how damaging it is. I can call 5G a death march. But who the hell thinks this is a good idea? Well, that's the cognizant dissonance. It's like, what is wrong with humanity that you could possibly even conceive of this?
Right. You run into the dissonance that, you know, that I ran into when I was first forced to question the official story on 9/11. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm going to need to believe that there's a network of people so ruthless, so amoral, you know, willing to commit this heinous act of mass murder in the name of what exactly? You know, makes that could possibly, why would any sane person want to do it? Why would any sane network of people want to put in place a lethal network of satellites that's going to turn this, you know, incredibly toxic and deadly form of radiation on humanity? Well, then you need to, you know, go back into the depopulation agenda. You need to go back into the whole story. And yeah, even today, you know, here I am. I'm sitting here in southern Colorado, looking out on a beautiful landscape. I go down to the market. I talk to, you know, good folks, regular Americans. You know, I buy some coffee. I buy some water and cheese, head back, living in, you know, and I know this big picture, but of all this insane stuff that's going on. But when it comes to it, just going through your day, yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, because even for us who know all this stuff, there's still a cognitive dissonance about, yeah, and it's not just a story that me and my friends talk about on the internet. It's actually happening. And yeah, it's probably our biggest challenge in terms of getting people to not only wake up, but to take action. And that's what I'd love for us to talk something about is, okay, what action? You know, as you say, Shungite is not, you know, we can't put a Shungite blanket over the planet yet. Well, maybe we can. We haven't figured out how to do that yet.
Oh, we already have it.
A Shungite blanket over the planet?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that then.
Well, first off, there is the concept of, one of the things that, because I wanted to focus on Sage, but what you said, and I don't know that I can pull it up right away, it was this idea that we're living on a living Earth. I mean, Buckminster Fuller said it's the planet Earth. It's the spaceship Earth. This is a biosphere that is full of life, but it's fragile. And yeah. Why would you destroy your spaceship? Which is what is exactly is what is happening. So we're on a spaceship. And that concept of being on a spaceship is because the spaceship has an energetic feel to it. I mean, it's all energy. You know, I mean, the universe is energy. So if you think of spaceship Earth as a multitudinous ball of energies, all right, that when they are vibrating in unison look like solid, but it's energy. I mean, it's just frozen right. energy. That's why we can interact and feel something solid, because that energy is vibrating at the same speed. So it feels solid, but it's only energy.
Yeah.
So what happens on the planet, and this goes back to, you know, like shamanic and other really deeply ingrained in nature concepts of the energy weave. And so you have a weave of energy of the trees. And within that weave of the trees is the weave of the pine. There's a water weave, and there's a shungite weave.
Hmm.
As we put the... Go ahead,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, we're back and forth. A shungite weave, now we know about the huge deposit in eastern Russia, and you're saying that there's an energetic weave that transcends that deposit that is planetary?
Yes, and it's not just the mother field, the load in Russia, okay? It's every single piece of fleck of that shungite that is worldwide now, okay, is feeding the field.
So the more that shungite is distributed in whatever form to people who are waking up, or even if they're not waking up, that as little packages go out in UPS and FedEx around the world, oh, I want a pendant, oh, I want a pyramid, oh, I want a cell phone protection, that is spreading the shungite field?
Yes, and there have been shipments that I believe that Gaia hijacked, because all of a sudden shipments of shungite don't get to where they're going. Well, you can't destroy shungite. So where did it go? Gaia needed it someplace else.
Because well, how would that happen, though? I mean, Gaia hijacked it. How does she hijack it?
Well, like, for instance, I had, I don't know, it was 500 pounds of shungite in bricks. I mean, like, they were all pound and above. And it was coming by ship. I get it, and one of the packages is gone. Well, it wasn't gone. Let me put it to you this way. I had the box. I got all the right number of boxes, but one of them had a huge hole in it, and there was only maybe a quarter of what should have been in there. The rest of it had fallen. Where? In the Atlantic? Maybe.
Huh.
You know? I mean, we have had so many weird things with shungite disappearing. And I just think that it's part of the magic of working with Gaia, who is a creator consciousness, an energy field of spirit and mostly love, who is, you know, part of it. We've got our angelic guides. We've got extraterrestrial, etheric guides. There are so many people that are working on this particular storyline of the shungite. You can't underestimate. I've been at this since May of, actually March of 2014. I have never, and I've been, you know, 20, 30 years in the mineral business, I have never seen a stone hyped as much as shungite that not only met that hype, but keeps teaching us more and more and more.
Yeah.
So it's like teaching us what I call enterology. And enterology is a study of energy. It's like, okay, I can study metaphysics until, you know, I know more than anybody else in the world. I still don't understand metaphysics as far as the rest of the world goes, because I can't explain it to them in ways that they understand. But we have the quantum field, the quantum physics, the quantum science, which, again, because it's so close to metaphysics, a lot of mainstream people don't like it because it's saying, get over yourself. You know, it's energy. It's energy. And so by taking those two fields and bringing them together under the name enterology, now you've got a different science. It's looking at everything as energy. Not just the quantum field being a quantum energy field. No, everything is energy. And how do you operate within those energies? How do you tweak those energies? How is it that when one person makes an enormous step in consciousness, you affect over 40,000 other people almost instantaneously? Why? How's that? Well, because you're an energy field. You are vibrating within this energy soup at a specific frequency. But you're not alone. There are others out there, 40,000 of them. I'm just giving you a figure. I don't know. Walt said it to me. It makes sense. But you got 40,000 other people that are vibrating very similar to you. And it's the concept of resonance, which is at least one of the most important concepts in enterology, is that a vibrating field of energy will affect energy fields around them. And the closer they are in their parameters, the more influence. So if you got somebody that's a real na-na-na-na-na, and you've got another person over here that's very similar to you, when you make the change, they will feel it. They will make a change. This other person won't even feel it, except to say, what the hell is the matter with you?
Yeah. Wow. Well, this goes right to where we are with SAGE. With, you know, the Sacred Academy of Geoenergetics, which has just been founded here in Crestone, where, you know, we will share the hard science, we will share the metaphysics, you know, based in sacred activism of how can we make a difference quickly while staying anchored spiritually, and what does that mean in terms of spiritual practice. We're not trying to teach anybody any dogma or insisting on some religious structure. We want to go to, you know, the science of consciousness and spirit, and what can we do now to, as you say, have a resonant vibrational impact across this whole field we're discussing? Because time is short, you know, and to remind ourselves that we do have all these allies. That, you know, the angelic realm, the devic realm, the elemental, the higher level off-planet races, that these are all realities. And, you know, and people like, you know, I come from a big family. I got 9 brothers and sisters. I'm 1 of 10, right? And I can talk to 2 of them about this. You know, the rest of them, they're like, oh, they roll their eyes. They go, yeah, Michael spent too much time in L.A. You know, I'm from Chicago originally. And they cannot go there. You know, we're very familiar with this. You admit one fact. If you face, you know, the fact of the real story behind 9/11, you know, the implications and corollaries and rollout from there to the elite pedophilia network, to the history of the banking system, there's no escaping it once you allow one fact that upsets the whole apple cart into your system. So, you know, what we're doing here, this is such a huge window of light that I feel you're opening here, Nancy, because you're bringing, you know, your own personal story, you know, the high credibility of your own personal story to the table here with all of this hard information. And when it comes to, you know, for us here with the Sacred Academy of Geoenergetics, we are intensely focused on finding and pulling that lever of change that is real, that is the game changer, that is going to be most effective, and that we can reach people with, that we can, you know, tell this story in a concise way to people such that it cuts through the cognitive dissonance of people just not being able to hack it or deal with it. And we say, look, this is about your kids. This is about your family. This is about that tower you see going up down the street. This is about, you know, you don't need to buy all the rest of it or, you know, mystical stuff or our conspiracy theory stuff, believe this. Because people are dying. Because, you know, how many hundreds of physicians in Germany, please stop this. Because of the, you know, the MD that testified in front of the Senate and said, please stop this. You know, it's just go with that and protect your families. And then meantime, on our side, to find and identify, you know, on the consciousness level, the strategy and dynamics and programs and techniques that we can put in place, that we can share with people, that are going to turn the corner on the vibrational level. You know, I don't pretend to understand all this in specifics, but I know it's real. You know, 30 years of meditation and activism and being a spokesman, and this is what tells me that this is real. So I'm just really excited to be making this connection with you and your work and the reality of Shungite, because I'm working with people.
Let me just interrupt you here, because we're at the top of the hour, and I have people who listen to us that need this break.
Okay.
So it's a 3-minute break, and this show is not going to be long enough, Michael. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder, thunder.
Welcome back to the Shungite Radio Show. It is January 22nd, 2019. My name is Nancy Hopkins. This is produced by Cosmic Reality Radio, and with me is Michael Henry Dunn. Michael, are you back? Maybe not. Are you muted?
I am here, Nancy.
Awesome.
Can you hear me?
Okay. I can. All right. Yeah. Okay. So, You were talking about what can be done by Sage.
Right. As I was saying that, you know, we have three principal pillars, you might call them, in the Sacred Academy of Geoenergetics, SAGE, which are, yes, hard science, geoenergetic science, particularly the kind of science you've been bringing forward in, you know, the last hour that we've been talking, and then sacred activism training, of which is about outreach to the souls who are drawn to this kind of work, who have a commitment, who have the background, and whatever your religious background is, or lack thereof, you know, there is the need to anchor spiritually as a counterbalance to the work you do as an activist in the world. And I've been following the work of Andrew Harvey, whom I've studied with in that regard since I met him in Copenhagen, Denmark, in 2009 at the UN conference on climate change. I was part of an interfaith gathering there that Andrew spoke at, and then I connected with him again a couple of years ago. That work is a second element, and that the metaphysical sciences, the techniques, the ways of working with consciousness that, you know, I mean, you've just shared with us all just hard stuff about what the intelligence community has been doing for decades, what the Soviets were doing for decades, you know, in terms of remote viewing, telepathy, mind control, etc. And my family, you know, we were a typical Irish Catholic family in Oak Park, Illinois, except that my dad was a holistic pediatrician back when there was no such thing. And they were very forward thinking, and we were all trained in Silva mind control programs. A better name for it would have been Silva mind seminars. Mind control sounded kind of dark. But, you know, we were trained in remote viewing and self-healing when I was 13 and 14, because my parents thought this was a really cool thing. So, you know, I've been seeing this for a long time, but to have your story and background of, you know, and it's been out there. I mean, you know, it's been used in a lot of Hollywood movies about, you know, when you go all the way back to Top Gun, I think there's, you know, hints about Soviet psychic technologies being used in military applications. So, you know, our focus is specifically right now on putting the three of these together, the hard science, the sacred activism, and the methods of working on a consciousness level, so that, you know, all three are needed. It's, hey, you know, I'm the son of a holistic pediatrician, I think holistically. So we are at a point right now with SAGE where our focus and critical need is outreach to the people who belong with us, who are drawn to us, who are drawn to you, because it's not going to be about, oh, we're the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, we're the greatest nonprofit light workers. You need to donate to us. Yes, of course, we need donations and resources, just as your work does. Another critical opportunity that we have is to unite all these different groups and freedom fighters and light workers and, you know, across a whole spectrum, to not have us all competing with each other for attention and funding, but to have a way of creating a network of networks, a community of communities where we're sharing information and resources, and we can, as close as we can, as best as we can, find a common, compelling agenda. Because, you know, it doesn't matter whatever your organization's goals or agenda or purpose or dream is, and there's, you know, beautiful variety of them out there. If 5G goes into action, you know, kiss it goodbye. This is front and center for the planet, for humanity right now. So I'm very excited about the outreach that can happen here. You know, I've shared the link to the SAGE webpage that we have on 5G. And hopefully, you know, you can share that with your audience. I just put it into our chat window here. But anyway, that's what the piece I wanted to share to start the second hour here. I'm sure there's a lot more to cover.
Well, you know, it's the concept of my story is better than your story, because I see these as stories. And right. being in the business of finding out about people, especially with like Jan Shaw, she is got a radio show that goes on Saturdays at 2 to 4 Eastern Time, and she has brought in just kind of like regular people, awake and aware people, but just, you know, regular people. They're not known, you know, by hundreds or even, and but she finds them, and then she brings them on, and all of a sudden, here you got another story, another take, another perspective, but we're all on the same path going to the same place. And there's right. got to be a path for every individual. And one of the most heartfelt things I can say about doing my job is how many times I go, oh my gosh, there's another one. Because even yeah. the people who are sitting with bad health, you've got bad health, or you can't get out, you can't be an activist, all you can do is, you know, basically sit there and listen to us, and but you don't, you are incredibly important, because it's your energy that has actually stabilized the biosphere long enough for us crazy people to come awake. Now, what do I mean by this? This planning of the destruction of the country began with Nazi Germany, World War II. They didn't yeah. lose that war. There was no war. There was no, they didn't lose it. 20,000 of them disappeared. The highest echelon, the SS, disappeared. Right. Where'd they come? They came to America and the Soviet Union. All right, we never won the war. We lost World War II. Because what they did, because Germany was only, the Germans weren't, it was, Germany was a place. They didn't give a crap about Germany or Germans. They put up the airs that they did. They were in using it to try to get control over the rest of the world. So then they said, oh, we went with the wrong country. We better get over there and do it to the United States. They're the bad guys in town. Because at the time, Germany was the military, you know, nation. The United States was a bunch of farmers with a good industry. We were not big in the world. People forget that.
Yeah.
So the war made us big, and then because now we're big and we're powerful and we do have the possibility of taking over the world, you know, the Germans just left, or the Nazis, fascists just left and came to America. It's called paperclip, right. And there's a lot of other secret paperclip. Words. Yeah,
yeah.
You don't know.
Well documented. Sure.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So what we're talking about, and I remember it when I was studying, I was a history major, when I was studying Nazi Germany. And I remember thinking, how the hell could these German people let this happen? How could they let it happen? And I proceeded to spend the rest of my life watching it happen to America. And yeah. I'm screaming and I'm hollering and nobody's listening to me. Nobody's listening to many thousands of others that are screaming and hollering. But in the meantime, we've got these people that think we won the war, think we're the best nation on the world, think that we are the best humanitarians. We give more to more people. Everything is hunky-dory. We're good people. Life is good. Oh, yes, there's all these tragedies and stuff, but that comes with life. Life is good. Those people, in that belief, were not... The cabal couldn't overpower them. They kept the reality going. So every time the cabal wants to, you know, try to get rid of us, this energy says that's not possible, and it blows up in their face. It's like some kind of a cartoon story.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It's like you know, Roadrunner and Coyote.
Exactly.
It never quite works.
Exactly.
And this is what I, you know, I try to remind people of, and I brought this up the couple of times I've been on Carrie Cassidy's program, that, you know, part of the reason I think there is this rush to implement 5G is that they're losing, is that the light is growing faster than they can stop it. And, you know, they have, as you say, there are remote viewers that are tracking it oh, we got to put out this fire here, we got to put this fire there. You know, this is spreading too much awakening and awareness and rising vibration. It's like a whack-a-mole game, and they're losing it. You know, it is, they are losing, and they screw up. You know, the 2016 presidential election did not go the way they intended it to go. And, you know, the way that so many of us tend to buy into despair, tend to buy into the notion that the cabal is this all-powerful, monolithic entity that, you know, everything that happens is because they wanted it to happen. That's BS. They screw up. They lose. They have to recalibrate. They fight each other. There's huge factions of that entity that are fighting each other now with completely different agendas, trying, you know, because they're service to self. They're all about service to self. And inevitably, with those folks, they betray each other. They turn on each other. And, you know, we have this gathering light storm, you might call it, like that piece of music you were playing during the break, you know, the thunder coming in. And this is what we can galvanize. And because of my background in the theater, that, you know, I trained as an actor, was at the Juilliard School, I had a 15-year career on the stage. And then in L.A., I was in the story department with CBS. And then I began to see these, you know, stories of lost history that were obscured. And I started to put together programs of sharing that with the public in a way that was entertaining and accessible and gave them a story that was based on facts that, you know, suddenly made it clear. And I feel like that's what we're doing now. It's what, you know, when you talk about who Americans really are at heart, and we still, you know, I grew up, you know, when I was a kid, the Memorial Day parade in Oak Park, Illinois, or the 4th of July parade, you know, I'd stand there holding my dad's hand on the sidewalk and, you know, yeah, we won the War of Freedom and we defeated the Japanese Empire and the Nazis, you know, and the Holocaust, and we're the good guys. And they, you know, the story of us, of coming to this country as, you know, free enterprise, a land of opportunity. And yes, you know, you cannot ignore or remove from that picture the reality of what that meant for the tribes, of what that meant for the Native Americans. And, you know, that is the huge karmic burden that Americans carry, and that we, you know, that Standing Rock was all about, hey, you know, we need to clean this up too. But the heart of what made me proud as a kid to be an American, you know, my great grandfather fought at Gettysburg. My dad was at Iwo Jima. You know, and even though, yeah, that was a cabal-funded war for their purposes, and you know, yeah, like you say, the USA won. So okay, we need to infiltrate and take over the USA more completely. But that American spirit, that's not going to go away, and I believe it is going to triumph. And I'm going on the road with a program called Better Angels: The Healing of America, which is, that's a quote. Better Angels is a quote from Abraham Lincoln's first inaugural address. Civil War is about to break out. States are seceding right and left. And he's saying, you know, we must not be enemies. We are friends. So, you know, what is it? The mystic cords of union, he calls it, stretching from every patriot grave and every heart and hearthstone across this broad land, shall yet swell the chorus of the union when touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature. You know, and this country's so divided right now, and we, you know, when families aren't even talking to each other, you know, on, it's like a Trump side or a Democrat side, and it's exactly where they want us. This division is exactly where they want us, and it's my hope and goal that we can come home to who we are as Americans. We can disagree about healthcare or small government versus big without calling each other traitors and demons, and allowing ourselves to be manipulated by the mainstream media BS propaganda. So anyway, I know it's a bit of a long speech there, but I just wanted to share that those couple of pieces.
Well, the thing of it is that we wouldn't disagree if we knew the truth.
Right.
You know, people present, you know, I mean, look it. It's rational. You know, the thing that has disappeared is the golden rule and the concept of we can do this because there is a certain number of facts, and a rational person is always going to see how the facts fall together and what the outcome is. But when you're being told facts are this on one side and facts are this on another side, well, yes, you're going to make a different determination. So that's why I have a radio station. Because it's when we looked at the whole situation, it was preposterous. And Walt pointed it out. He said, why are we trying to change that reality? It's working perfectly for what it was built to do. How are you going to change a perfect reality? It was built to control. So we decided, well, then you're right. You know, let's just build a new one. And Buckminster Fuller also said that. You know, build yourself a new reality. It's easier.
Don't find the old one. Yeah. Don't,
yeah. So when you start to build the new reality, what are you actually doing? Well, we went through a whole series. It's an amazing thing with energies. We were working, you know, energy. And we did. We built ourselves the energetic framework for a new reality. But what are you going to put in there? You know, once we had the structure, it was like, okay, so now what are you going to put in there? Well, we're going to put in discussion. Communication solves all problems. So we go on the radio. We schedule all these radio shows where we get together and we talk just like we're talking. All right? But because we understand the power of the mind, we know that these little conversations, we don't have to have anybody listening to us. The fact that we're doing these little conversations, and if there's nobody around to talk to you like this, then talk to yourself. Because every time you do, you put into the collective consciousness, the cosmic consciousness, your thoughts. And reality is what we think it is. Majority rules. So the more power you put into the collective consciousness by just talking and thinking and, you know, just what if it's like this? What if it's like that? I mean, people that have followed me and Walt know that we make up stories. We make them up. They weren't true before we said them, and then they're true. Why? Because we said them. We demonstrate manifestation. You know, we've been doing it since the fall of 2014. That's why our radio show is called Reality Sci-Fi. We have done some preposterous things, and we do it live. Why do we do it live? Well, because if you guys listen to it, you think about it, you put your energy into it.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Matrix. That essentially, you know, there's organic intelligence and there's artificial intelligence. And the story, you know, of the Matrix of what ultimately happens is that Neo, you know, when he takes the right pill, the red pill, he wakes up and okay, there he is, you know, on this ship way down underneath a ruined planet. But his organic intelligence of his human spirit plugged into the Matrix is able to overcome artificial intelligence, to absorb it, integrate it, and transform it ultimately. You know, when Agent Smith, you know, suddenly just gets, you know, transformed and turned into a million bits of dispersed, energetic information. The key beautiful moment about that story, why does organic intelligence win out over AI in that story, in the Matrix? It's because when Neo dies, Trinity says, I love you. Get up. You are the one. And that's what each of us needs to say to ourselves. I love you. Get up. You are the one. And that is how, in that amazingly compelling, very popular story, our organic human intelligence and spirit overcame malignant AI. So that's what's lighting up for me as a storyteller, because that's kind of what I am at heart. And when we, married the great story to the facts, you know, that we're bringing out in this interview, I'm hoping this can reach a lot of people, because it's, you know, I've learned over the years, and from a close friend I worked with in LA who's just brilliant at applying the power of storytelling on a world health level, that's where transformation happens. So I'm lit up by this conversation.
Well, you know, I loved your use of the word organic intelligence. Okay, because Walt says, you know, he says, well, we have biological AI. And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, think of it. He said, you got all these people walking around looking at their cell phones. He said, they are AI. They're biological entities, but they're being controlled by AI. What the phone is, AI. Yeah. And he's absolutely correct. But you're pointing to the concept of organic intelligence versus artificial intelligence. And I have done, you know, these conversations where we talk about all these different things and we keep going, and it's like it's all divinely inspired, because everything is divinely inspired. And we get to a point where it all comes back down to this confrontation. Supposed confrontation between God and the Archangel Lucifer.
Yeah.
All right. And every time I get back there, I mean, I have to go through the Garden of Eden to get back there. We get back there. And I think that Lucifer is artificial intelligence, whereas God is promoting organic intelligence. And that the bet was, God said, humans will go with me. And Lucifer said, no, they'll go with the artificial intelligence. That's me. And so that was what the game set up to be. And so let's go back. Let's take that step back to Garden of Eden, because this is where it gets really like, oh. Because they tell you everything. It's just you got to figure out what they told you. So you've got Adam and Eve. All right, so God makes Adam, and Adam is in this beautiful place, and everything is wonderful and just amazing. But Adam kind of get bored, so God says, "Oh, we got to do something." Well, because Adam had already been in nature, in Gaia's biosphere, he had begun to develop an emotional connection to the animals and to the plants, everything, love. But it was something that was built into him, but it was the first time that, you know, love became part of it, and that was because the animals were loving him. So all of a sudden you got a new force created, the force of love. And so, you know, God goes, wow, because why did God do this to begin with? God is all-knowing. It's like anything else. You might know 2 and 2 is 4, but do you know 2 and 2 is 4 until you say 2 and 2 is 4? You know, if you're going to be an entity of life, then you have to continually experience, and experiencing is the past, the stories of why doesn't this path work where this one does. You know, God is all around us. We are God. So when you get to the Garden of Eden story, okay, you got Adam there, and God goes, "Wow, Adam, this is amazing. You've created this new thing, and we need to somehow or another perpetuate this." And that's when you get Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The embodiment of love.
The embodiment of love, and then that starts the AI, Lucifer, going, interesting this love thing is. Okay, then let's go for the weak one, the one that just showed up that doesn't know the ropes yet. And now you have the serpent story. What does the serpent say to her? He says, if you take of the tree of knowledge, you will be like gods. Think of that. If you take from the tree of knowledge, you'll be like gods. Isn't that what AI is promising us?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And what, you know, what I'm hearing when I hear you put that Garden of Eden story in that context is, okay, so yeah, there's organic intelligence versus the AI, the ego-oriented, ego-championing artificial intelligence, which says, hey, knowledge and you can be like gods. Organic intelligence united to love, which really is interwoven with love, that is to unite us with divine intelligence. There's a, you know, a three-way game going on here between organic intelligence yearning to unite with divine intelligence and being distracted back down into the world by Luciferian AI, which is service to self, which is ego as God, which is, you know, ultimately, hey, you know, it's whoever is cleverest and smartest and strongest in the service of their particular individualized self, which, by the way, as we pointed out in terms of, you know, physics itself and quantum, is a delusion. When you hurt somebody else, you actually hurt yourself, because guess what, bozo? There's actually no separation. It's an illusion. So, you know, the logical consequence of Luciferian AI ends up with pedophile networks that torture and kill children. You know, that's the expression of it at the elite level of what is going on when service to self, united to AI, and using their, you know, sick rituals of harvesting energy, etc. That's the logical conclusion of it, which, you know, they're just attempting to pull the wool over people's eyes. And again, this is another one of those areas where people just can't go there. They don't want to go there. It's so sickening. It's so difficult to accept that this goes on.
I don't want to go there. Do you? It's horrendous.
I became acquainted with it. You know, you talk to any therapist who's been in business for, you know, a number of years about, okay, how many of your clients were dealing with, you know, traumatic memories of satanic sexual abuse? And how broad is this network? And I, you know, I did a lot of work with Dr. Ann Wilson Schaaf back in the 80s in the Living Process Network in Colorado and elsewhere, where, you know, people with these horrible buried traumas were reliving them. And I just saw horrific stuff and, you know, horrific information that just makes your heart stop. It's so awful. And yet this is the consequence. And we, part of what sacred activism as an approach can do for us is to allow us to not let this make us despair, to get up in the morning. And, you know, when I think of the men and women like on the child trafficking task forces with like FBI or LAPD who have to deal with this stuff every day and then somehow come home to their families and try to feel like a normal human being whose consciousness has not been polluted by images and realities of what is being done to children with the cooperation of, you know, elite networks. How do you do that? You have to be anchored in spirit. I don't care if, you know, if you're Muslim or Jewish or Christian, you or Hindu, whatever, you have to have an anchor in spirit that allows you to know that you are doing the work of love, that you're doing a brave work of godly love. That is the true nature of reality, that is not allowing yourself to be, you know, to be hoodwinked and seduced and fooled by the Luciferian game. So this is the big picture. And, you know, there are going to be people out there listening to you and me, Nancy, today after this and hopefully taped, that there are the souls out there who are going to hear this wake-up call and who are going to get in touch with you or with me or with our network of friends and say, what can I do? Okay, you've lit me up with your radio show. You've appalled me with this information, but I want to make a difference. I want my life to have meant something when I die. And that, for me, is the big motivator. I think about, you know, we're all going to die at some point or other. We're all going to go back to spirit, and we're going to have a life review. And I want to look back on this life and say, okay, I was imperfect. I struggled. But when I'm shown the picture, I did my best and I made a difference. And that's what I live for. And I think you and I, we have this perspective in common. It's just so enheartening and encouraging for me to hear the breadth of your perspective on this. You know, the hard science, the military background, you know, what you've been through, and this critical perspective of the spiritual picture. Anyway, it's just, as you can tell, I'm pretty excited about this conversation.
Well, my life is an interesting life. I mean, it's a wild life, but it's divine intervention. Somebody had to be trained to understand it all in the way that I do understand it. You know, I came here from spirit to do a mission. And I believe firmly that I was, why am I doing this? You know, and it turns out to be important now. It's like, yeah, your life is already set in motion the moment you incarnate into this new physical body.
Yeah.
The problem is that there's all these distractions keeping you from knowing who the heck you are. And that's the main thing, the main job that each and every one of us has, is to get rid of the distractions and to get into your authentic self. And you're going to be wowed by your authentic self. Because we keep listening to how we're supposed to dress, how we're supposed to work, how we're to, you know, no. You only need to listen to your internal dialogue. Oh, but if you talk to yourself, you're crazy. Well, be crazy with the rest of us. Because I'll tell you, normal is insane. You don't want to be normal. But what we need you to do is to realize that you don't have to actively do anything except learn and think and let your mind, it's mind warfare at this point.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're dealing with. And
yeah,
so
it's a battle for the mind.
Don't tell me that I don't have enough time. You, every single day, every thought, you're at war. You don't realize it. If you have a loving, good thought, it goes up into my reality. If you have a negative thought, it goes into the matrix reality.
Yeah, and that's the challenge for us that I see, is to do our work, face what's real, and have the heart and courage to continually, you know, to look up, to embody love as best we can, to not let ourselves be dragged down into despair, and to know that the light is winning and will win. This is something I brought up when I talked to Kerry Cassidy last Friday, is that there is a brilliant visionary whom you and I both know, Reverend Maya Nartumid. And what's come through that she's shared with us is that, you know, the cabal, the Illuminati, gets all kinds of publicity. Everybody goes on and on about the evil cabal, and they're everywhere, and they're infiltrated everywhere, and they're all powerful. Well, they're not. They you know, they blow it a lot. But on the other side, there is a counterbalancing network. There is what we call, and they may even call themselves this, the Inner Light Network, or the ILN, and that we need to remember that this network is not only real, it is also infiltrated throughout all, you know, many high positions in politics, military, you know, all the same places, that it is also multidimensional, that there are, you know, angelic energies, Devic, elemental, higher off-planet beings who are working together. I mean, you and I are part of that network also, because we came here with this purpose, this dharma, that, you know, that we're also playing our own part. And I think we just need to remember this, that the ILN, the Inner Light Network, is a reality. They're always 3 or 4 or maybe 10 steps ahead of the bad guys, and that there are these strategies in place already. Like you telling me just now about how, well, there's quantities of shungite that go mysteriously missing, and was it the bad guys taking them over, or was it Gaia working through her various agents as a conscious planetary soul to disperse the energetic healing dynamic of shungite all around the planet. That's one example. There are also methods that I have recently been acquainted with of working on the energetic level of protection that can not only be protection be extended to individuals who are targeted, but that can protect homes, can protect areas with, and I can't go into it because, for the usual reasons, but that these ways of protection and healing, of using the energetic, reality of shungite and the other ways of extending, genuine, real, metaphysical level protection that has 3D consequences, that these realities are in place, and we'll be able to share more of it, perhaps as time goes by. But, this is all part of letting people know that, the light is winning. And as you say, Nancy, how can it win every day for you, for each individual listener? Well, share some information, talk to a friend, remember the golden rule, don't buy into the despair, and then protect your family, do the practical things, get some shungite, do some activism. On the Sage website, we have our 5G page. We share links to organizations like the In Power Movement, which has got a comprehensive guide, not only the risks of 5G, but how to organize effective legal action against 5G implementation in your community, how to sue the FCC. We also have a link to an international appeal to prevent 5G on Earth and in space. We all need to join together and do whatever we can, but just to remember that the light is winning and will win.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I like a phrase, we're so strong we don't have to go to war to win. Because it's the way we're thinking. I'm not being, philosophical, theoretical. I am being the scientist telling you that reality is what we think it is. Period.
Yeah. Quantum physics tells you that. Yeah.
Quantum physics tells you that. If you cannot have manifestation without a thought. And we are the thought. And those cabals, those little people that have been running around like this, they don't have thought. They are programmed from birth. They are so controlled. And all you have to do is unplug them. Now, how do you unplug them? Well, you unplug them when you don't believe them in them anymore. That's where they get their juice and their control. People are all very, very freaked out. If you know anything about the economic situation, that the financial instability is crashing all around us. Okay?
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you, why do you care? It was an illusion to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It is such an illusion that the only way it can be reset is to reboot and to make it all zero. Let's start again. So
yeah.
Your fear of financial disaster is a delusion that is perpetuated by the system that wants to maintain itself.
Mm-hmm.
If we go back to zero, let's say we go back to zero, what do I mean by that? Well, your mortgage is gone. The car loan is gone. You owe it, your credit card is gone. It's all gone. You're back to zero. You owe nobody. Nobody owes you. Okay? What does that mean?
Yeah.
It means that we're free to start again. In a logical, The financial system that we've been going under is so delusional, but it's never worked. It's always failed. It always goes, it's like you've done the same thing over and over again. It always has the same thing. That's why in the early years before computers and everything else, every 50 years they'd have a jubilee. To what? To go back to zero. Because by that time the financial systems would be so screwed up. All right, now in those days, the little guy didn't have much because they weren't working with dollar bills. They were working with, you know, I've got this much grain. Do you have, you know, a piece of ham that I might swap? You know, so it didn't affect the most people. This Jubilee, the only way that history tells us they can go back and make it right is to zero it out, is going to free you. Do you understand that, ladies and gentlemen? Put your thoughts in that. Build a reality where the only way out is everybody goes back to zero.
Well, do you think that's going to happen, Nancy? We hear a lot about it, about the financial reset.
It's the only way that it can happen. You can't take a system that is delusional to begin with, that is not based on any kind of treasure back. It's a monopoly game. It's a monopoly game. That's all it is. It's a game. You cannot possibly think in terms of fixing it. It's a disaster.
Yeah, this is a key point for what's going on right now. And I talked about this with Carrie Cassidy on Project Camelot last Friday, that the financial reset and the idea of the Jubilee and, you know, the restoration of the Republic and the 70,000 sealed indictments and, you know, how the cabal is going to be taken down, the elite pedophilia network is being taken down, that, you know, that all of this is going to transpire and may, you know, be unfolding even as we speak. And there's prisoners at Gitmo, and General Kelly and General Mattis and Jeff Sessions are all down there prosecuting all the bad guys. And now, of course, we all want to believe that that's going to happen. And I don't have enough inside intel to know whether it's true or not. There seems to be certainly enough smoke that there's a fire there. But my concern, back in 2012, 2013, I was working on the Global Collateral Account story, and I was communications director for Neil Keenan. I wrote the preface to the $1 trillion lawsuit back then that David Wilcock was talking about against the cabal entities. And as I studied that, as you say, these systems collapse. These fiat currency systems got nothing, you know, backing the money. Sooner or later, they collapse. Well, back in like 1961, the Rothschilds authorized a family biography of their whole story. They're kind of suppressing it now. It's pretty hard to find. But when you read that book, you trace how they handled every single collapse. They knew the collapse was coming. And they managed to reboot with the new system and come out on top time after time. And this is something we need to be, you know, aware of. And you've probably heard about this over the last few years, how the financial reset going to asset-backed currency again, the whole, you know, all the buzz about the Iraqi dinar, why it kept getting delayed, the word was, well, it's because the good guys have to make sure that the bad guys cannot reboot their power in the new system like they've done before. And so I just urge us all to be a little bit cautious, you know, about all the good news stories coming down, and to just, you know, use your own discernment to see in the next few months and couple of years here, because as you say, Nancy, you know, the dirt's hitting the fan. There's major, major stuff coming our way very soon. Use our discernment to see, okay, let's turn back to basics, the golden rule, the actual values of love and compassion. How is it playing out? Are the forces that are now being put in power the same old bad guys wearing a, you know, a restored Republic disguise? Or is it, you know, the real virtues of the American people that are being restored in this republic? Is this, and this is what I brought up in, to Carrie, you know, the current bad guy cabal scenario is basically 1984, George Orwell. The concluding sentence is, you want to know what the human futures look like? Orwell said, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. Okay, that's the bad cabal. And then there's the faction within the cabal that's fighting them, which you might call, you know, the friendly form of slavery, the Brave New World Aldous Huxley version, where, you know, oh, we give you lots of drugs and we lots of sex and we've sort of neutered the whole gender concept. And you're still cattle on the way to the slaughterhouse, but you're fat and happy cattle, you know, eating non-GMO foods from Whole Foods before you then end up in the same prison camp as, you know, as in the George Orwell version. So when we're talking about how these systems, financial systems, are an illusion, it's eventually going to collapse. We're moving towards the biggest collapse that the planet has ever seen with these kind of systems. And we just need to be very discerning and heart-centered about what's following, what is going to come out on top. I think there's going to be some ups and downs where one faction's on top and then another before it all shakes out. Anyway, I don't pretend to know exactly how this is going to play out, but history tells us to be very wary about who wins the revolution and how quickly they turn into the same bad old regime. So I hope that's a helpful perspective. I just wanted to share that.
Well, it demonstrates the problem. And the problem is, what reality do you want? See, you just put on the table, well, this could possibly happen and that could possibly happen and that could possibly happen. I totally agree. These are different versions of reality. They're different stories. You're the storyteller. What story do you want the end to be? In my story, okay, in my story right now as we're sitting here, people are having an instantaneous awakening. Why? Because we've been feeding that instantaneous awakening. You know the 100th monkey story. There are so many of us out there, and I'm talking about everybody, not just the people, me and Michael, that are out here talking. It's you guys. You guys are the energy that we feed off to be able to do what we do. We're not special. It's just our jobs. Your job is to make yourself special. And once you're special, then there's one more special person up there looking at a reality where, yes, everybody goes back to zero. Everything is fine. And I've been living in that reality for quite a long time now. Remember, I'm a very, very talented remote viewer and telepath. And if I tell you that I think something is going to happen, okay, then that's what I think. But if I tell you I know, it's because I know. Yeah. And I know that what we are going through right now has never happened in the annals of time. And it is not just for this planet, for this biosphere. This is a multi-dimensional universe. What's happening here is affecting multidimensional beings. This radio show right now is being heard not just all over this planet, but it's being heard by etheric beings and by the galactics around us. This is how important these kind of shows are. Not because we've got a lot of listeners there, but because we've got a lot of listeners up there and around us that we don't even understand. This is bigger than big.
Yeah. This aligns, as you probably know, so powerfully with, you know, with Reverend Maya Nortumid's work and perspective on the multidimensional reality of what's happening here. And of course, Maya was a guest on your program just last week, and is a major co-founder, I would almost say, of the Sacred Academy of Geoenergetics here in Crestone, because there is this powerful effect across dimensions. It's, you know, that's again to me one of the most encouraging realities. Like you say, you're talking to yourself or you're talking to your friend, and it ripples across time and space and touches, you know, many thousands of other beings. And it's one of the things where, okay, you're going for funding. Gosh, we need funding. You know, we're a nonprofit, 501c3, and we're talking all this great stuff, but gee, we hope somebody contributes to us. Well, you know, funders, especially, you know, billionaire funders, they want to say, okay, show me your impact. I care about your goals. What's your impact? Document it. Prove to me that, you know, what you're doing. Well, we got to be able to say, Okay, here's my business plan, and it really depends upon the fact that our impact is multidimensional across time, space, and universes. So it's a little hard to track, but believe me, it's happening. We're actually changing not only, you know, this world, but we're rippling across others. So,
I'm with you there.
So how are you willing to help us, and how much are you going to give us today? You know, it can be a little tough.
Well, you know, when I started out, it was a nonprofit. We got $500, $600 in donations over 4 years, even though we're proving we can save the bees. You know, people don't want to give. Trust me, I hope it's different for you guys. But for me, it was like, what is your problem? Why won't you give some of your energy by money? You listen to my radio shows. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gotten the offer to begin with. I mean, it's like, what is the matter with people? And it baffles me. So, but the thing of it is that... We've got to come together, but I stress again, it's not coming together in groups. Sage is going to, in my estimation, be able to become a focal point. But I'll tell you something, Michael. When I started out years ago, I tried to put together a website that I could bring in all of the organizations and all the various fields that I thought were legitimate, because so many people were falling into illegitimate or crappy, you know. I said, no, I'll know the true ones out there, and I'll get them together, and we'll have a portal so that people can come together. When I went to do that, I was absolutely awestruck, because there were billions of these organizations all over the world.
Yeah.
They didn't need some portal. There was no portal that could possibly hold all of the very good, positive things that human beings were doing, building their own stories, building their own path to a new reality. I mean, I was absolutely stunned. And I hope you find the same thing, that there are so many of them that it's beyond anybody's control. And I'll tell you also that I learned that when I finally got to a point when I realized, oh, I do not have control here. I don't know who does, but it is not me, you know. Right. And I trusted the energy forms, whatever they were taking, that had guided me, which I call the universe of divine intervention. Whoever it was that had been, you know, guiding my life in so many weird ways, when I gave up the control, all of a sudden everything started happening. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
You know, Shungite started happening, the radio show, everything. I mean, I'm in a better position financially now, after I've retired and got this job, than I ever was working for the man, because I'm working for Gaia.
Yeah, and Gaia takes care of us when we're working for her. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, not lavishly or unnecessarily, you know, luxuriously. You know, we don't need yachts and mansions. We need a roof and good food and clean water and the ability to be with our friends and do our work.
You know, I asked about that. I said, why are you keeping so many light workers in financial, you know, unnerved because of finances? And they said, oh, well, because if they had a lot of money and they had the luxurious things and all that sort of thing, you know, it perpetuates a very big weakness in them, in that they begin to do everything to protect the money. It's their money, my money. Without the money, they can't fall into that, and so they're actually protecting them. They said a true light worker will get to the point where they understand that they don't own money. It's a delusion. But they can move energy by making money. And I make a tremendous amount of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the big picture reality.
Because you just keep going. Do I have a lot of money? No. But I make it. I move it. Mm. And that's just moving energy. If you think of money as energy, then you sitting on that $5 that you can give to Sage, you're sitting on that $5. You take it out and you put it there. I guarantee you will get $15 back in a very short period of time. And they will have that $5 to do something that is motivating human beings to a new level of reality. And we've just run out of this radio show. It's the top of the hour. God bless you, Michael, and all the people in Sage. It's been this has been a wild ride, huh?
Yeah, you can say.
Would you like to say something?
Just concluding, you know, the heart of what we're doing is assisting humanity and, you know, ourselves towards what we could call the ascension timeline of the upliftment of the human spirit towards, you know, love, compassion, and greater attunement to the divine, and away from the AI timeline. And we know what that is. And this is a critical moment. And what we've shared here today, I hope all your listeners really take to heart in their own lives what they can do. If they can help your work, our work here with some donations, that's wonderful. We are deeply grateful. And most of all, just be present in your life to what even small actions you can take on a daily basis of talking to your friends, your family, to those who are ready to listen, or even just doing the small actions of love and courage that make a difference. So thank you so much, Nancy, for this opportunity to share this and to hear your amazing story, and bless you for your work.
Well, I certainly appreciate you, and we've got a long road ahead of us, but it's I think we're kind of like, you know, we've got a ride. I feel like I might be in a carriage now. I felt for a long time I was on the ground running, and then I got on a horse, and now I think I'm in a carriage.
Yeah, you got some friends in the carriage with you.
Oh, sure. Yes, many, 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 many friends. Thanks, everybody. We'll be doing a live show at 6 to 8 tonight, Cosmic Reality Radio Show. And, Michael, be safe. We'll talk later.
Okay.
Thank you.
You too, Nancy. God bless. Bye-bye.
Be safe, everybody. Be blessed.
You have been listening to the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio and simulcasted over Haggishack Radio.